Hello, everyone. Welcome back. It is the afternoon of May 5th, 2016. It's a little after 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It's a beautiful day here in Winnipeg. Actually, it's going to be intensely hot. It's going to be up over 31 degrees centigrade today, which is quite unusual. I hope things are well in your part of the world, or at least as well as they can be. It's been a busy time this past month, dealing with various health issues in the family. That includes a situation of dementia and a situation of cancer. I went out and purchased a new computer, so my life has been taken over by Microsoft at this moment. It's been an interesting process, a big learning curve for me. I've always used computers that belong to other people, and they were already set up. So, in setting this one up and upgrading to Windows 10 and then learning to disable most of Windows 10 so that I could convert it back to a very simple operating system for the few basic things that I'll need a computer for has been an interesting learning curve. Not one that I want to spend the rest of my life on. The American presidential campaign continues to surprise everyone, with Donald Trump being the huge winner on the Republican side. So he is the front runner for the Republican Party in the States. Everything's shaping up to be a very curious presidential race. I've had three people send in questions over this past month. We'll get down to that shortly. As always, I want to thank anyone who sent in words of appreciation. I want to thank those who sent in questions. I want to thank those who sent in good wishes for my retirement. I mean, that's another interesting issue. The government didn't deposit my monthly pension into my bank account, and it was supposed to be my first payment from the government, and it didn't show up. So I went searching for it and discovered that there are so many baby boomers applying for their retirement that the government can't keep up to the processing demands. So they're not sure exactly when they'll be able to give me my pension. But I was prepared for all kinds of situations. So I can manage quite well financially until they do start depositing my pension in my bank account. I want to thank those who sent in donations. I want to thank those who purchased Boudescence over the website. And as always, I want to thank Marcus Fellows for establishing this website in the first place and for continuing to post these podcasts each month. As always, if you're finding it difficult to relate to any of the considerations that I'm presenting on this site, and you're interested, you may want to check out the two main talks on the site. If you go to the Listen drop-down menu and you scroll down to the title Talks, if you click on that, it'll take you to the two main talks on the website. One is titled An Overview of Spiritual Awakening, and the other is titled Acknowledging the Moment. And they will give you the broadest overview of what I'm presenting here. Whatever I present is simply for your consideration. I'm not asking anyone to agree with me, and I'm not asking anyone else to look at life in this way, or I'm not suggesting that anybody else should look at life in this way. It's simply for your consideration, and whatever I say should be related to your actual experience. If you're going to get anything out of this, it has to be related to your actual experience of life. So it's not a matter of me telling you how you should look at life. It's a matter of you considering what your actual experience in life reveals about life. Does your actual experience support your usual assumptions about life? So, having said all of that, we'll get down to the questions that have come in. A first person has written in to say, "Hi, Daryl. Could you please say more about your use of the word apparent? You say apparent person, apparent thing. Does this mean that people and objects are not real? Thank you." So, yes, I use the word apparent quite a bit in these podcasts. I will talk about the apparent non-dual sense of existence, an apparent person, an apparent world. And I use it only in these podcasts. It's not as though when I'm hanging out with my friends, I don't talk about going to an apparent movie and having an apparent good time. So it's only in these podcasts that I'm using this word apparent quite a bit, because it's always in reference to what would be considered a classical non-dual sense of existence. And so from that sense of existence, any intellectual interpretation of existence is not true. So to describe existence in terms of people and planets and emotions and things, this ultimately, from a non-dual perspective, is false. It's not saying that the actual happening of this moment is not happening. So we all basically have the impression that something is happening right now. So we might call it the happening of this moment. Now, the happening of this moment is interpreted in many different ways. So the average person is thinking that there's something called a human being, and that's separate from all the other apparent things or forms around them. So I might say that Daryl Bailey, a human being, is sitting in this room, and the room is filled with items of furniture. There are walls, there's a floor, there are chairs, there are windows. But that description of this moment from a non-dual sensibility is not true. So when I'm speaking about this non-dual sensibility and I'm using these storylines, I will often use the word apparent. So I will talk about there's an apparent person sitting in an apparent room, and there are apparent windows, walls, floor, and so on. But that description is ultimately not true. And I'm saying that very simply because there's nothing in my experience to indicate that that description would be true. So in my own experience, in the whole sense of existence that I have, it's very obvious to me that as a baby, a so-called baby, I didn't have a storyline for any of this. All of us have that impression that when we were apparently born, we didn't have a storyline for any of this. So, if you were to walk up to a baby that was 1 hour old, and you ask the baby, "Tell me what life is all about." Every one of you knows that the baby isn't going to give you any response. You'd be lucky to actually even catch the baby's attention. The baby might look at you for a moment, but then for the baby, the happening of this moment is a buzz and tingle, a vibrant happening that has no description. I mean, the baby isn't sitting there thinking, oh, this has no description. There are no thoughts whatsoever regarding this happening. Now, the closest we could maybe get to that is right in this moment. We could think to ourselves, what is there when there is no thinking? And at the end of that question, we simply rest. And for a moment, there's this happening, what we would call the happening of this moment, but there isn't any intellectual interpretation of it. And those intellectual interpretations will pop up as an expression of this happening of the moment. But if we examine those descriptions, those intellectual interpretations, we can perhaps realize that there's no way that we can possibly come up with a true name for any of this. Like those of us who are born in an English-speaking country, we have one set of labels. And if you were born in another country that didn't speak English, you would have a totally different set of labels. And so it is with each country that speaks a different language. There's a totally different set of labels. And all those labels ever do is point to various portions of the happening of this moment. But for every one of us, when this happening first made itself obvious, we could say it was in the womb, or we could say when we were 1 hour old or a newborn. But really, what that means is when it all of a sudden felt as though something was happening, there wasn't any storyline for it. It didn't come with a set of labels. And for every one of us in the storyline that we have now, the story is that we were taught to point to different portions of this mysterious happening with certain labels. But the labels are different in each country. So if we wanted to, the labels could be anything. If we agreed, we could just point to everything in terms of the alphabet, X, Y, and Z. Or we could make up totally new words like blix and flute and wozzle. So instead of sitting around and talking about bodies and minds and consciousness, we could talk about blix and flute and wozzle. It would have just as much meaning because the words simply point to different portions of this mysterious happening. It's also the case that the labels point to an apparent form. So, again, for every one of us, for anyone who has lived life for a certain number of years, and it doesn't have to be all that long, we begin to realize that everything in life is changing. Our thoughts are changing, our moods are changing, our relationships are changing, our bodies are changing. The climate is changing, the place we live in is changing, the planet is changing, the universe is changing, everything is changing. So, to think of life in terms of form is a little bit ridiculous at some point. It might be helpful on a day-to-day basis to look at the apparent forms around us, or to point to the apparent forms around us and use certain labels. It might help us bake a cake or build a bridge, but it's not telling us what reality is. Because if we really examine our actual experience of life, our actual experience of this happening, of this moment, to say that everything is changing means that whatever this is, it has no form. It's somehow some kind of movement or action, some kind of vibrant functioning that has no particular form. And whatever label we use to point to it or to point to any portion of it, the label isn't any true name for it. It's just a sound or a symbol used to point to some aspect of this mysterious happening. So that's the reason I use the word apparent when I'm expressing this non-dual sense of existence. In this expression, and I have no idea what this expression actually is, it just happens the way it happens, but in this apparent expression, there is the use of what we call words. I don't know what those are, so they are apparent words. There's some kind of movement. I have no true name for them. So this interpretation that this situation is Daryl sitting in a room expressing a non-dual sense of existence, that's an intellectual interpretation of what's going on here. And from my, what I would call my actual experience, that can't be a true description of what's going on here, because whatever label I have is not a true name for this. It's just something we've all agreed on. And the whole notion that it has any kind of form to be labeled is ultimately ridiculous. Again, as I say, on a practical level, if I want to build a bridge or bake a cake, then using these labels and pointing to apparent forms, all of that might be useful. But in terms of understanding existence, explaining existence, they're totally useless, because ultimately there can be no true definition or true description of whatever this is. It's just this, doing what it does. So there can be no true description of it, and there's no true name for it. Whatever this is, it has no particular form. It's a moving, shifting, dancing, eventing, vibrant process or functioning, and there's no way to say exactly what it is. Again, I stress these points in these podcasts because that's what this whole website is about, a consideration of the non-dual sense of existence. And this is one of the fundamental aspects of a non-dual sense of existence, that there's no way to explain what any of this is. It's just this. So, as I said, if I'm out with my friends, I'm not sitting there talking about an apparent movie that I apparently had a good time at. I'm just using the stories the way everybody else would use the stories. But in this situation, I'm questioning the story. And if you're interested in a non-dual sense of existence, ultimately you will have to question your stories. And that has to be a direct consideration of what your actual experience of life is, and whether or not the stories that you have are really a true reflection of what your actual experience is. The two main points of a non-dual sense of existence are basically, the first being, there's no way of saying what any of this is. And the second one being that whatever this is, it simply happens on its own. There isn't any evidence anywhere of anything or anyone causing it to happen. And there isn't any evidence anywhere in our actual experience that there is someone influencing it or directing it in any way whatsoever. So again, it comes down to, there's just this simply happening. So the happening is happening. It feels like something's happening right now. That's happening. the various stories we have about what it is, those are false. Stories about people living on a planet are false. So it's just apparent people, and it's just an apparent planet. All right, another person has written in to say, "Hi, Daryl. Here are some more questions coming from my friends when I tried to share your non-dual expression with them." That was probably interesting. Let's say it's 3 p.m. yesterday, and I'm wondering what to have for dinner later that evening. I haven't had pizza in a while, so I decide to have pizza. I decide to call my favorite pizza place and order a small 10-inch pepperoni and sausage pizza for delivery to my place. I have a wonderful dinner and go on to other events that I planned using my mind earlier in the day. So in that very normal day, there was a sense of, am I who was making decisions, a mind deciding what to do, and a self that followed each step to carry it out. I clearly made decisions 3 hours in advance regarding the size and type of pizza. There was a clear passage of time, 3 hours, during which I anticipated what the pizza would taste like. I looked at the clock to make sure it was time to order pizza. There were clear actions taken leading to the outcome of pizza for supper. It wasn't the ever-changing, inscrutable, unformed that was making the decisions and making dinner happen. All of the above were done by an individual's sense of self and an individual's mind, and they were done ahead of time. So not only the mind and self are real, time is very real as well. The bottom line in all of this, when talking to average people about non-duality, they don't have the sense that it's a mysterious, unformed happening that's doing everything, because that idea simply contradicts our daily living experience. I would very much appreciate your views on the above. Highest regards." All right. The first thing I want to say is be very careful about forcing a non-dual sense of existence on somebody who's not interested. In order for anyone to really resonate with a non-dual sense of existence, it would require that they would be very interested in examining the actual experience of their life. And most people are not interested in that, because if they did, it would disrupt their usual assumptions about existence. Most apparent people have a certain view of existence, and that view carries with it the sense of a self, like some kind of invisible self that lives in the head of the body, and that invisible self is somehow guiding the body and the brain through the world in order to accomplish certain things. So they have a very strong sense that they understand existence through these storylines, and the storylines carry the impression that they are in charge of their lives. So if they started to examine what their actual experience is, it would disrupt those assumptions. And that brings me to the next point, which is at the end of this question, this person has written in saying that when talking to average people about non-duality, they don't have the sense that it's a mysterious, that life is a mysterious, unformed happening, because that idea simply contradicts our daily living experience. And I would disagree with this. The average person doesn't have the sense that life is unexplainable, unformed, and simply happening. But that's not because that view contradicts their daily experience. They don't have that non-dual sense of existence because they're not interested in looking at their daily experience, their actual experience. So this is an important point because in this non-dual consideration, you get a lot of really wild presentations. People leave the impression that this is somehow some kind of mysterious, mystical moment when we somehow blip into some other mind state and it's somehow unworldly. But in actuality, this non-dual sensibility, this non-dual consideration is a very simple consideration of what your everyday, ordinary experience actually is. The ordinary experience of this moment. And it's a simple acknowledgement of what that experience actually is. Now, most people do not acknowledge the happening of the moment in any kind of clear way. They prefer storylines, and they never explore those storylines to find out if those storylines are actually supported by the experience of the happening of this moment. So that's the reason that most people would not have the sense that life is a mysterious, unformed happening. It's because they don't look at their actual experience. So let's consider some of the points that he's made here. He's saying, let's consider that it's 3 p.m. yesterday, and I'm wondering what to have for dinner later that evening. So, all right, this question comes up. What should I have for dinner tonight? Now, why did that question come up? It's not because you were thinking ahead of time, oh, I think it's about time to have an urge to consider what I'm going to have for supper tonight. The thought simply arises, what am I going to have for supper tonight? It's not like you have to go through some thinking process beforehand in order to tell yourself that at that moment you need to have a thought. The thought just comes up. So there's no evidence of a self that's making that thought come up. Now, yeah, I heard of Sam Harris had something that seemed to help point this out, if I remember correctly. It was, he would ask, okay, I'll try to see if I can remember this as he presented it. In this moment, I want all of you to think of three cities in the world. Just think of three cities. You're totally free to think of any three cities in the world. So just think up. Now, just think of three cities in the world. So now, it was my question that provoked the arising of thoughts in you. And the thoughts of three cities came up. It wasn't the thought of 25 cities, it was the thought of three cities. And in each case, you know, there may have been, you might have thought of perhaps four or five, but basically it came down to three. Three names made themselves obvious in this moment. Now you have no idea how that happened. It just happened. I say, I want everyone to think of three cities in the world. You can think of any city that you want to think of. But the names of three cities came up. You have no idea why those names came up. And those were the only names that did come up. You didn't think of 25 cities. And you obviously weren't in control of that selection, because the only ones you thought of were the three names that came up. Now I want you to pick one name out of those three. Pick the name of one city out of those three. So now once again, just notice what happened there. Think of one of these cities. Just pick one out of the three. Now notice what happened there. One name became predominant. One name pushed itself forward. You have no idea why that one name pushed itself forward. It just did push itself forward. So in the same way, if we're sitting around in the afternoon and all of a sudden the thought comes up, oh, wonder what I'm going to have for supper tonight. We didn't make that happen. It just happened. We don't have any experience of going through some decision-making process about what I should be thinking in that moment. That thought simply arises. And as this person points out, it's an inclination to have pizza. Now, you have no idea why you have an inclination to have pizza. There are all kinds of foods you might have on a particular day, but on a particular day, you may have the inclination for pizza. It's simply there. You don't create it. There's an urge for pizza that comes up. Now, automatically, there's the feeling that in order to get this pizza, I have to make a phone call. So there's this urge for pizza, and the urge, even if there are other urges for other foods, as this person, with this particular situation that this person is pointing to, the urge for pizza ends up being the strongest. But you don't decide that the urge for pizza is going to be the strongest. It just simply is the strongest. And it's strong enough that it provokes an action. It provokes the telephone call to the pizza place. So looking at this thus far, we basically have a need to eat in order to survive. We don't create the need to eat. That's simply given in this situation of life. The urge to survive we don't create. That's simply given in this situation of life. On this particular day, there's the need to eat, and at a certain time in the afternoon, there's an urge to consider what we're going to have for supper. But we weren't sitting there thinking, oh, I need to have an urge to consider what I'm going to eat for supper. The urge to consider what I'm going to eat for supper simply comes up. So we don't create that. It's simply given in this situation of life. Then there may be other urges for other foods, but ultimately, you know, on this particular day, the urge for pizza is the strongest. But we didn't decide the urge for pizza is the strongest. There's simply an acknowledgement that the urge for pizza is the strongest. So we didn't create the strength of this urge. And it's strong enough that it provokes a phone call. What we call a phone call to the pizza place in order to get a pizza delivered that evening. So if we really examine the situation here, it's not a situation of an I causing any of this. There's no mysterious invisible I self, a sense of self, some invisible sense of self living in the head making any of this happen. The experience is simply the experience of the need to eat, the urge to eat, the urge for pizza being the strongest, and the urge for pizza being strong enough to make a phone call, to provoke a phone call to a pizza place in order to have pizza that evening. So So if we really examine that situation, it's not a matter of a self creating it. It's not a matter of a self deciding to be that in that moment. It's simply what we would call this so-called self being expressed in the way it's expressed in that moment. We don't create our needs, we don't create our interests, we don't create our concerns, we don't create our urges, and all of those provoke certain actions. The strongest needs and interests, concerns and urges provoke our actions, and the actions can only be carried out by a body and brain that we don't create. If we examine this in even greater detail, we might consider that the need to eat, what I might call the need to eat, I don't really know what that is. When I was supposedly 1 hour old, I didn't have a label calling it the need to eat. The urge to eat that simply happens. So the need to eat that simply happens. The urge to eat that simply happens. I didn't have a label for that either. Ask a baby that's 1 hour old, do you have an urge to eat? The baby's not going to say, oh yes, I have an urge to eat. You're going to have to take 7 years to train that baby to give that baby your story of existence before you can sit down and have a conversation about life using that story, because the baby doesn't come with a story. And once again, the labels that we use to point to this happening, what I call the need to eat. Well, what is that really? I don't know what it is. The phrase need to eat, the need to eat, points to some portion of this happening. But this happening is ultimately unexplainable. There isn't anyone who knows what this is ultimately. We have all kinds of apparent stories, but we don't even know what those stories are. We call them stories. In another language, they're called something else. Nobody knows ultimately what they are. And this whole functioning of a body and brain is not something that we decide to do. So your body functions a certain way right now. Your brain functions a certain way right now. What are you doing to make them function that way? Your heart beats, your blood flows, your autoimmune system is working, there's tingling, there's vibration, there's pulsation. You're not making any of that happen. The cells of the brain are firing. The electrochemical firing of the various brain cells give rise to the next supposed thought, but nobody ultimately knows what any of this is. All of these phrases, all of these labels simply point to various portions of this happening. But none of them ever actually tell us what this happening is. No one has an experience of some invisible self that's making any of this happen. Even if you're sitting there thinking that there's an invisible something sitting in your head, looking out through the eyes, the fact of the matter is, you don't have any experience of that. No one has an experience of that. No one has an experience of some invisible thing that's making us have a survival urge. No one has an experience of an invisible something that's making us have the next urge, or making us have the next need, or concern, or interest. No one has the experience of an invisible something that makes one urge stronger than another. The needs, the interests, the concerns, the urges simply happen. They happen in whatever way they happen. We don't even know ultimately what we are, what they are. We call them needs and interests, concerns and urges, but there's no way of saying ultimately what any of this is. And it simply happens in whatever way it happens. And if those urges, those needs, those concerns, those interests are strong enough, they provoke an action. And the action can only take place using a body and a brain that we didn't create, and a body and a brain that we're not, there isn't any invisible self making the body and brain operate the way they operate. Nobody has the feeling that they're making their heart beat. And it's rather odd that we have the impression that we're making the next thought come up. Because it's not like we sit down and debate about what the next thought is going to be. The next thought simply happens. Even the urge to have a thought simply happens. There's no evidence anywhere of an invisible something that's making it happen. There's only evidence, there's only the actual experience of this happening. And ultimately, there's no way of saying what it is. So our everyday experience is not something that supports the usual assumptions that we know what this is all about, and that we're in charge of it. However, if you present this non-dual sense of existence to people who have absolutely no interest in exploring their actual experience in any great detail, they will simply refuse it, as most people do. As long as it remains on the level of concept, you know, I present a non-dual sense of existence, and that presents a challenge to our usual assumptions of existence. But in order to explore it, we have to leave the thoughts behind and actually acknowledge how this moment is presenting itself. And most people have no interest in that. So for most people, this remains simply an intellectual exercise, and it becomes a matter of opinion. One person says, oh, this is how I see life. The next person says, no, you know, my story is the truth. So it becomes a situation of one person saying, you know, these stories are a little bit suspect, and the other person saying, no, they're not. So it kind of reminds me of U.G. Krishnamurti, with some of the people that would come to him, and somebody would say, well, I'm suffering in this moment, and U.G. would say, no, you're not, and the other person would say, yes, I am, and U.G. would say, no, you're not, and the other person would say, yes, I am. I mean, that goes nowhere. This non-dual perspective was always presented in a couple of different ways. So initially there would be an intellectual consideration of a non-dual sense of existence. But the other aspect of this would always be what traditionally is known as meditation. So if somebody says to you that life is ultimately just a happening that's simply happening, and there's no way of ultimately saying what that is, how would you explore it most directly? If somebody says that it's a happening that's simply happening, then you'd sit down or you'd lie down and you'd make no effort to cause it. You make no effort to have a thought, make no effort to have an emotion, make no effort to have an urge to do something, and see what happens. So traditionally, we have these so-called practices, just sitting, bare awareness, pure awareness, in the yoga traditions, we have the corpse pose, which is the most difficult of all the yoga postures because it's simply not making any attempt to do anything at all. And in that, life may reveal itself to be this mysterious happening that's simply happening. Even if you make no effort to have a thought, thoughts will come. Even if you make no effort to have an urge of any kind, urges will come. Even if you make no effort to direct your life, certain interests will arise. Even if you wanted to sit in meditation for the rest of your life and never leave the room you're in, it isn't going to happen. You will at some point have an urge to go to the toilet. You will have an urge to go get something to eat. You will have the urge to go associate with friends. If you need a job to survive, you will go out and work. And those urges will simply arise on their own, and they will increase in strength until they provoke an action. And then the only action that can occur has to occur with a body and a brain that you didn't create. You don't create your body and brain, and you don't create how they work or how well they work. So in the course of a lifetime, you might have the urge to be an astrophysicist, but it turns out that you're not that great with math. You're not going to be able to snap your fingers and develop an innate talent for math. And even if you have an urge to explore mathematics, you're not going to decide ahead of time how good you are with mathematics. All of that is simply given in this totally unexplainable happening. So our daily experience does not support the notion of some invisible self in the head directing the body and the brain, some invisible self that's creating the basic needs we have, the basic interests we have, the basic urges we have, the basic concerns we have. There is no experience of an invisible self that's causing any of this. It's quite obvious there's this happening, and what we call needs arise, and what we call urges arise, and what we call interests arise, and what we call concerns arise, and the various urges in their various strengths arise, and the strongest ones provoke certain actions. All of that's very obvious, but it's also obvious that ultimately we don't know what any of this is. So it's simply happening the way it happens, and ultimately there's no way of saying what any of this actually is. Again, this is just for your consideration. I'm not trying to convince you of this because I can't convince you of this. You either have to have an interest in exploring the happening of this moment in a very intimate way, or this will be of no interest to you at all. This won't make any sense at all. This isn't a situation of me convincing you that this is the way it is. I'm simply saying that in my experience, this is what's obvious. What's obvious in your experience? And as far as any of this happening over a period of time, ask yourself right now, what does it feel like? Does it feel like the past? Does it feel like the future? Or does it feel like something we call now? Go through your entire day, and every 5 minutes, what we call every 5 minutes. Ask yourself, what does it feel like? Does it feel like the past? Does it feel like the present? Or does it feel like the happening of now? And what you'll discover is that you never have any other experience than the feeling of now. You don't have an experience of a past. You have what we call a memory of a past. So a memory is an idea. You have an idea of something that we called the present moment that no longer exists. You don't have an experience of a past because the only experience we ever have is the feeling of now. And so it is Einstein and Stephen Hawking would state outright, time is an illusion. Now, why is it an illusion? It's an illusion in the same way that ideas of unicorns are an illusion. They're an illusion because nobody ever actually experiences a unicorn. So we would say the unicorn exists only in our minds, in thought. And it's exactly the same case with time, with the past and the future. The past and the future exist only in ideas. As far as our actual experience goes, no one experiences anything but the feeling of the happening of now. This happening right now. It always feels like this happening right now. So is there something called time that exists running along parallel to the happening of now? Something called time in which there's a past and a future existing in the present moment? Not according to our experience. Our actual experience is just the feeling that there's something happening now. We can imagine the past and we can imagine the future, but we never actually experience it. When that so-called past was occurring, you called it the happening of now. When that so-called future actually occurs, you'll call it the happening of now. And in this moment, you don't have an actual experience of a past. You don't have an actual experience of a future. You only have the actual experience of the feeling that it's now. So these considerations, these non-dual considerations, they're not to give you another view of existence. It's not to come to some idea that makes total sense. It's pointing out that none of these ideas ultimately make any sense as far as truly describing what's going on here. There's something odd in all of them. They can't possibly be a true description. So what does that leave us with? Well, if all the descriptions are somehow distorted or a fantasy, what remains? You can think the question right now, what is there when there is no thinking? And in that moment at the end of the question, simply rest. It doesn't feel like nothingness. What remains is what actually is. Just this, without some kind of intellectual interpretation. And when the intellectual interpretation comes back, when the thought comes back, perhaps we can realize that there's no way of saying what that is either. Somebody told me to call it thought. Somebody told me to call it an intellectual interpretation. There's no way of saying what that is. It's just this happening the way it happens. All right, another person's written in to say, "Hi, Daryl. I wanted to check to see if my understanding of what you're saying is correct. In this message, it's simply saying that there is the happening of this moment, and there is no person that can do or change anything in this happening of the moment. It's ultimately useless when it comes to solving the apparent problems in our apparent life. It only removes what the Buddha called the second arrow." So, yes, basically, that's it. I mean, there's just this, what we call the happening of this moment. I don't even want to call it the happening of this moment. There's just this. And it's simply occurring the way it occurs. Now, in this happening, we point to certain portions of the happening and we say, "Well, that's me deciding to do something. That's me having an urge to go out and eat, or having an urge to go floss my teeth," or whatever. But ultimately, we don't know what that is. And once again, if we really examine the happening of this moment, there is no experience of some invisible thing called an I or a me that's making any of this happen. We go through life and we say, "Oh, I have a body, I have a brain, I have emotions, I have feelings, I make decisions." So from this non-dual sense of existence, the question is, what is this I, this extra thing that you're throwing in, this I that owns the body, that owns the brain, that owns the emotions? What is that? It's quite obviously there is this happening that we call the body. There's this happening we call the brain. There's a happening we call seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking. But there's no experience of anything owning any of that. There's just this happening. Now, the stories that we have about this happening may describe a body interrelating with something else and causing something to happen. But even in those storylines, the urge that we have to do something is not anything that we create. An urge simply arises. It's not, there's no me that's making it arise. It simply arises. And maybe it's strong enough to provoke what we would call an action. And in order to follow through on that action, it has to be followed through with the only body and brain that we are. It's not that we have it. We have a body and a brain. We are a particular body and brain, or what we call a particular body and brain. Ultimately, there's no way of saying what it is. So, yes, ultimately, there is no independent self that is making anything happen, and there is no independent self, some invisible something somewhere, that's influencing any of this or directing any of this in any particular way. There are what we call urges that arise, the urge to go in a particular direction. But there isn't anything that makes that urge come up. The urge simply comes up. And either it's strong enough to provoke an action or it's not. So how would we be influencing the movement of life if any urge we have to influence it in any particular way is already the movement of life? We don't exist as anything outside the movement of life, making any of it happen. We don't think a bear is deciding its career as a bear, we don't think a squirrel is deciding its career as a squirrel. We don't have the impression that a squirrel is sitting there having long philosophical debates about the right way to behave. And the really strange thing is that if we sit around having a long intellectual philosophical debate about the right way to behave, we never acknowledge the fact that we didn't make that debate come up. We're compelled to have those kinds of debates. It's not like we sat around somewhere intellectually deciding whether or not we were going to have philosophical debates. With pretty much everything in the universe, we have the impression that they're the expression of the laws of the universe, the laws of nature. Everything. We don't have the impression that a storm is deciding its direction as a storm. We don't have the impression that a rose is deciding to be a rose. And we don't have the impression that a rose is deciding to behave like a rose. It's simply an expression of nature. We don't have the impression that a bear is deciding its career as a bear. It's simply an expression of nature. But for some reason, we have the feeling that we exist as something totally apart from the movement of existence, something that stands outside of it, directing existence. Now, I don't know about you, but that seems egotistical to the point of being ridiculous. So again, there's no experience anywhere of someone who's causing existence to move in whatever way it moves. There isn't even any experience anywhere that we cause ourselves to move the way we move. We don't create our body and brain. We don't create the way they function. Whatever needs and interests, concerns and urges we have, we don't create those. They simply arise as an expression of whatever this is. So as this person points out, to realize this, it's ultimately useless as far as solving the apparent problems in our apparent life. Well, in a way, it's useless, but actually, in a way, it's not, because if you really realize this, then ultimately you may realize there are no problems in life. There's just life expressing itself. What's the problem? Just because you don't like it, maybe there's a feeling, oh, I don't like it, I don't want it to be this way. That's not a problem in life, that's just life expressing itself. So, again, as this person points out, it only removes what the Buddha called the second arrow. Now, there's a particular teaching that the Buddha gave, I think it's called the Salaka Sutta. And in that, he describes how there's only one difference between his well-trained students and the average person on the street. He said the average person on the street suffers the pains of life twice. So they suffer the pains of life. There's the actual experience of life being what we would call painful. But then the average person sits around saying, why me, poor me, only me, this shouldn't be happening to me. Why is this happening? Giving some kind of useless intellectual consideration to this, instead of simply acknowledging, oh, that's the way life expresses itself. And as the Buddha pointed out, his well-trained students didn't try to figure out any of this. There was simply the happening of life, the pains of life. And to sit around dwelling on some kind of intellectual consideration of what this ultimately is and what it's ultimately about and why is any of this happening, all of that is just adding useless suffering to the fact that life is what we would call painful. Now, be careful with this, because I'm not saying you're supposed to just be really glib about pain and about suffering. Again, it's just simply pointing to life being a totally unexplainable happening, and there is no me that exists apart from it that ultimately makes it go in any particular direction. That doesn't mean I'll sit around and do absolutely nothing when life is painful. It simply means that what we call the pain of life arises, and what we call my response to the pain of life will arise, whatever response arises. And all of that is just a totally mysterious happening that ultimately doesn't need to be understood. It doesn't need to be explained, because it can't be understood. It can't be explained. It just happens the way it happens. Again, this is just for your consideration, and it's what would be called a classical non-dual sense of existence. Now, this person has gone on to say, or to ask, why then did the Buddha prescribe the Eightfold Path if there was no one that can do or change anything? Likewise, why did many enlightened beings throughout history teach people to do good, to love their neighbors, etc., etc., when what's happening is automatic and will always be a mixed bag of good and bad? Best regards. So, why did the Buddha teach that? I have no idea. Why did many other spiritual teachers teach that? I have no idea. Why are contemporary non-dual presenters teaching a mixed approach to this? In one moment, they tell you you're just the dance of the universe, and the next moment, they're telling you that you have to improve yourself in some way. You have to learn to let thoughts go, or you have to... You know, I don't know why they're teaching in that way. I don't even know why I'm presenting things in the way I present them. It just happens the way it happens. And, you know, the story is, according to the Buddha, he presented the Eightfold Path as a path to awakening. He also gave a story about the raft and how in the raft... that a person can use a raft to cross a river, but when you get to the other side, you don't pull the raft out of the river and carry it around on your head. And in the same way, the Eightfold Path can be used to perhaps explore life and come to awakening, but once the awakening occurs, you don't need the path. Now, there are lots of people who would debate the interpretation of those teachings, and I'm not really interested in what the Buddha was actually saying. What does it really matter? It doesn't really matter what anybody else says. Ultimately, in order for you to acknowledge whether this non-dual perspective makes any sense whatsoever, you have to simply consider what your actual experience is. And that has nothing to do with anyone else. What's your experience of this moment? What is the actual happening of this moment, and how is it actually happening? If we go to any teaching, it doesn't matter whether it's Christianity or Buddhism or Taoism or Hinduism, those collection of teachings are filled with contradiction. And if you're looking for some statement that's going to resolve all the contradiction, you're not going to find it. The only place to find some resolution in all of those contradictory statements is in your actual experience. And once you acknowledge your actual experience, anything that those other people have said is meaningless. Because there will be the simple acknowledgement of the happening of this moment and how it's actually presenting itself. And then it doesn't matter what anybody else says. I can imagine that some of these teachers in the past advised that we love others around us because we're all in the same boat. We're all expressions of something that can never be understood. There isn't any supposed person doing any of this. Whatever occurs in an apparent person's life is just a matter of luck. The court systems in North America are now being challenged by the explorations of neuroscience because neuroscience can't find any evidence of free will. So it becomes obvious that the whole notion of punishing someone for behaving in a certain way makes no sense. They may have to be removed from society in order to protect people, but to punish them because you think they've made bad choices is ridiculous. Neuroscience can't find any evidence of a person being in charge of their life. We are expressions of existence, of the universe, of nature. No one gets to decide what expression they're going to be. So now there's this challenge to the court systems. How do we treat criminals? If they're not deciding to be criminals, if they're not ultimately directing their lives towards criminal behavior, they may have to be removed from society, but to punish them for doing something wrong is ridiculous because they didn't do anything wrong. They were being the only thing they could be. And so it is, it doesn't matter how many of these great spiritual teachings have told their followers that, or have basically told everyone that they should love their neighbor. Look around. Like right now, look around. After, what do we have? We have this thing called history. This so-called history, the so-called written history of humankind, and we have, what, at least 3,000 years of spiritual teachings that recommend that we be kind to others. Look around. How many people are actually being kind to others? We have these recommendations to love all others. Look around, how many people are loving everyone else? It ultimately doesn't make any sense because if we look at humankind, we're going to find exactly what we find in any other expression of nature. If we go to the oceans or we go to the forests, we discover a wide variety of apparent forms, apparent expressions of nature, and some of those expressions of nature are so radically different from other expressions of nature that they just don't get along. When a fox goes into a hen house, it's not to spread brotherly love. Foxes love chickens, but it's not a brotherly love. And it doesn't matter how much we tell those foxes to change their behavior, to behave in a different way, it generally doesn't happen. Perhaps there is some exception. Maybe there is some fox that went into a hen house and became friends with the chickens in the hen house. But that's not the way that the whole thing usually goes. And it's the same with human beings. If we look at nature, if we look at one group in nature, like birds, we don't have the impression that all birds love all other birds. There are certain birds that are naturally irritated and naturally the enemy of other birds, irritated by and naturally the enemy of other birds. And it's the same with human beings. It doesn't matter how many philosophical teachings we have, it's always the case that there are certain human beings that are expressed in such a radically different way to other human beings that they can't get along. There's no evidence anywhere in existence that they will get along. Maybe it'll happen in the future, I don't know. But there isn't anything in our so-called past, and there isn't anything in our so-called present to support that notion. All right, so that brings us to the end of the questions that have come in. I don't want to end this just yet. This has been going on for about an hour and 15 minutes. Maybe we could consider that, I mean, in all of this thus far, I've been pointing very radically to the fact that there's just this happening at the moment, happening the way it happens, and ultimately this storyline that we're somebody in charge or we're somebody directing life or influencing it, that storyline has to be false. It just is not supported by anybody's experience anywhere. And as I just pointed out, the most recent explorations of neuroscience directly point to that, that there's no evidence of free will. So there's no evidence of us existing as anything apart from the movement of nature, something that exists separately from the movement of nature that's directing the movement of nature. We are an expression of the universe. We're an expression of nature. Now, for a lot of people, when they hear this, they start feeling really unhappy because they think it means that, oh God, we're just subject to the whims of the universe. We're being pushed around by the universe and mistreated by the universe. But that's not what's happening here. That's not what's being pointed to. What's being pointed to is just this totally unexplainable happening. It's not that there's something that exists that's being pushed around by it. We are a totally unexplainable happening. Just as much as everything else is a totally unexplainable happening, simply happening. And fortunately, it's not a situation that everything that happens is unpleasant or negative. It's always mysterious. It's always unexplainable. It's always simply happening spontaneously. But that doesn't mean it's always unpleasant. So what we come to in this acknowledgement is this unexplainable dance of what would we call it? Existence? The river of life, the unformed ocean of existence, God, Yahweh, Atman, call it whatever you want to call it. It all simply points to just this apparent or this feeling that something's happening right now. So that's happening. What it is, who knows? It's an undivided happening. You know, we can talk about things happening outside of us and inside of us, but if we sit here and simply acknowledge the full happening of the moment, it's one big happening. It's only in thought that we divide it up into outside of us and inside of us. The inside of us is happening at the same time as the outside of us is happening. It's just one big happening. And no one knows what's coming in the next moment. It might be something wonderful. We all have wonderful experiences, moments of great joy, moments of great clarity. And we all have moments of sorrow, moments of confusion. It's a mixed bag of things. It's a moving, shifting, dancing function of some kind that expresses a huge array of apparent things, apparent forms. So some non-dual presenters would simply point out that it's a magical parade of ever-shifting appearances. There's no way of ultimately saying what this is. It's not moving on to be anything in particular. It's not something definable. So, in acknowledging this, what are we left with? I mean, many people who are drawn to acknowledge this very clearly, they will all say that it feels as though it makes a big difference in life. But it's a very strange situation because we don't get anything. We don't get more control. We don't get more understanding. Instead, we lose all control. We lose all understanding ultimately. And in that, we step out of the usual interpretations of life, the usual interpretations that are saying, there's something wrong with all of this. There's something wrong with me. I should be able to change all of this. I should be able to change me. We drop these idealized notions of what it's supposed to be, and we come to acknowledge what actually is. What do we get from that? Well, as the Buddha pointed out, we just suffer the pains of life once. And what's interesting is that life is not always painful. So from time to time, it's painful. But then we don't add this extra little storyline that says, oh, it shouldn't be that way. This shouldn't be happening to me. You're the reason this happened to me. I hate you. We no longer play with those stories. Those storylines may come, those storylines may arise, but all of that is just the natural movement of whatever this is, the natural expression of whatever this is. It just happens the way it happens. And so, as Jiddu Krishnamurti would point out, it comes down to a very basic situation, a very basic question. Are you always attempting to relate to life through these stories, or do you simply acknowledge a movement that can never be explained? A great miraculous happening. Or, as he pointed out in other times, he would say, you know, there is just the movement of the universe, and we're always making it our movement and saying that we're not doing it correctly. As Einstein pointed out, we're not doing our lives any more than a tomato plant is doing its life. Again, a lot of people don't want to consider that. They think that would be a terrible thing. But what's interesting is that to acknowledge that doesn't really alter life in any radical way. It's not going to take away the pains. But it's going to take away all of these ridiculous storylines that there's something wrong with it, that there's a little me that exists separate from it, a little me that somehow is being pushed around or somehow isn't getting what he's supposed to get or what she's supposed to get. We don't sit there blaming ourselves or blaming anyone else because it's quite obviously the fact that whatever's happening, nobody's making it happen. And when good things, the pleasant things happen, we can really appreciate, wow, isn't that a wonderful thing that life presents this pleasant aspect? And when the terrible things happen, the difficult things happen, we can realize, oh, this is a natural part of life. I'm going to have to endure this in whatever way makes sense to me, and I don't even get to make up my own sense of life. I don't even get to make up my own sense of how I should approach this. I'll be expressed in whatever way I'm expressed. And maybe there'll be some compassion, realizing that no one creates themselves, no one creates the situation that they're in. So, if you're having something great occur to you, you might realize that you don't get the credit for that. That is also the mysterious expression of existence. And if something terrible is happening to someone else, they're not to blame for that. They didn't decide to have that life. That's simply the expression of existence. We're all in this very difficult situation. There is this happening of this moment. Who knows what's going to happen next? There isn't anyone to praise or to blame for this happening. It just happens the way it happens. Every one of us shares that situation. Every one of us shares the difficulty of that situation. And maybe there will be those moments when the absolute mystery of this, the mysterious aspect of this, the fact that none of this can possibly be understood, it's all simply happening on its own. Maybe there'll be those moments when just the wonder of that arises. Always a sense of puzzlement, curiosity. What's coming next? Who knows? Is there another breath coming? Is there another heartbeat coming? Who knows? At some point, there won't be. So maybe instead of sitting around in good times saying, oh, this isn't good enough, and sitting around in bad times saying, oh, this shouldn't be happening, maybe instead we live somehow more intimately, in a more intimate way, with this totally unexplainable, mysterious happening. Always a mixed bag of things, great joys, great sorrows, great clarity, great confusion, always unexplainable, always spontaneously occurring. So again, this is simply for your consideration. Anything that I've presented is meant to be considered in relation with your actual experience. Unless it can be related to your actual experience, it's not going to have any meaning to you. So until next time, I wish you well over the coming month. I wish you only good things. However, I know it's going to be a mixed bag of things. So until next time, take care. Bye.